Well, one information item, we have a gold Saab in the parking lot with their lights on, and we certainly want anyone here to take care of that, if that sounds familiar. First item is we have a consent calendar, but I would like to make a few mayoral comments, if I could take that liberty to begin with. And of course, it's an honor for me to serve once again as mayor in my hometown, and I did want to acknowledge the former mayors we have up here that I learned so much from. Councilman Clay, you certainly got me involved in the community some 9 or 10 years ago, and your example when you served here as mayor was commendable of really teaching me to be involved with the community, and I appreciate that.
Thank you, Tom.
And Mayor Fonzie, you acknowledged that I was a mentor for you, and I want to say that you were a mentor for me. I think I appreciated the professionalism you brought to our council and how you conducted a very businesslike meeting. And I'm hoping to follow up with the best of both worlds, and I certainly want to continue to make sure our council is very community-oriented, and I also want to make sure we run a very professional meeting and get the business of the city done. And with that, I know it was a little challenging at our last meeting. We actually had three parallel meetings going on, and it was kind of confusing to pass back and forth. I've asked our staff to make sure they put a little extra effort in maintaining a council calendar so we can keep everyone informed of all the activities going on. And I would ask each of you, as things come to your attention in the community, we want to make sure we are represented as the city. Of course, as mayor, it's my responsibility to be the spokesperson for our community, but I want to share that with all of you. I think it's important for all of us to participate as much as we can. So please, when an activity comes up that you know about, make sure staff is aware of it. I want to make sure we all have staff support to represent our city well. So I ask for that as well. And then last comment briefly I want to make is to our community. I know I speak for all of our community as we welcome your input. We appreciate the diversity in our community. And you don't have to wait just to come to a council meeting to share with us any concerns or praise that you may have. Every one of us is very open to meeting with our constituents. We are very open to receiving emails from you, which are actually very easy for us then to pass on and follow up and make sure that we attend to things that are of interest to you. So I just share those brief comments as maybe a direction I would like to see us go. And with that, I'm going to ask for the approval of the agenda, if I may.
So moved.
A motion by Councilman Sturdivant, seconded by Councilman Clay. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. And one last item I'm going to ask our city manager, could you introduce for us our acting police chief this evening?
Yes, thank you. Sorry about that. Our acting police chief is Steve Gazelle. He's been with our department for more than a year now as a commander, and he's acting chief now.
Very good. Thank you. First item on our agenda is the consent calendar. Does any member of the public wish to pull any item on the consent calendar? Any council member?
Number two.
Number two? Thank you, Councilman Kelly. Any others? I'd entertain a motion on the remaining items.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Councilman Clay, seconded by Councilmember Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Government should be open as usual throughout the year to serve the needs of the people of the community.
Thank you. Any other council comments? Councilmember Clay.
Well, I think it would be better to leave it up to the discretion of the mayor and the city manager if we need the second meeting. A lot of times, Bob, we got people on vacation at that time, you know what I mean, and the council members and stuff. I understand where you're coming from, but that's just me.
Any other? Councilwoman Fonzie.
I would agree with Councilmember Clay that if a meeting needs to be called, I am sure the city manager could do that, and we could make ourselves available.
Thank you. Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yeah, I agree also with Councilmember Clay. I think we just need to stay flexible, that if there are vacations, then if the work's not there, we're not scheduling things and having to unschedule. So I agree with the flexibility this allows us to keep it as it is.
Thank you. My thought is I certainly want to be available, and I don't want to be holding back any opportunities. So I don't mind scheduling and then canceling if not needed. But let's hear from the city manager of why your recommendation was as it was.
Well, this is typical for our years. Often the activity level is lower in those months. It does give us an opportunity to plan and schedule for key staff to be away from the city when we're not preparing for council meetings. If, of course, we did have a council meeting issue that we needed to meet, much as I'm going to ask you to meet on this Friday, we would bring a meeting to you. We would also, if you decide to include them on the calendar, ask you to cancel a meeting if we didn't really have reason to meet.
Thank you. And as I understand it, the mayor can call a special meeting if needed, or any two council members. I remember there's some allowance for that.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm going to open up to the public, since this is an item that was pulled from the agenda. Is there any member of the public wishing to speak on consent calendar item 2? Seeing none, we'll close that public comment. I'd entertain a motion.
I move approval of number 2 on the consent calendar.
I second that.
Motion by Councilman Fonzie, seconded by Councilmember Sturdivant. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. We'll move on to updates from the city manager.
Excuse me. Sorry. I want to give you a preparation of a final environmental impact and expect to come to the Planning Commission and the City Council in May and June with that project for your review. So we're hoping to keep that project on schedule. Colony Square continues to move forward. The theater opens March 2011, and the related restaurant retail offices or retail businesses begin to open in April. In meeting with the representatives from Colony Square today, I believe almost all of the space now has leased. There's one little corner of space that's left. We have a couple of restaurants, or three or four restaurants, going in there and some other uses. The project redesign, they're considering that. They're talking about that. As you know, the project needs to move forward after the theaters are open, and so we're looking for some information from them, because certainly the market's changed, and the previous residential product that they had included in the project is probably not going to be part of the project. And I also wanted to talk with you about the disaster response trailer we have in the fire department. The fire department provides a wide range of community emergency services, as you know. And as you know, Paso Robles and Atascadero have teamed together for the North County Technical Rescue. And they have a very expensive technical rescue unit in Paso Robles. And we have been working on a unit the fire department has for several years. We've gone through various scenarios looking at if we did the whole truck, much like Paso Robles, we could be as much as $500,000. And we looked at maybe making our own truck for $100,000. And here recently, the fire department teamed with a variety of local companies, has been given a trailer, and the fire department and some local companies have been rebuilding that trailer into our technical rescue vehicle, which really will be all serve all kinds of purposes. The main goal of the team in our community is to help raise awareness of the diversity provided by these services. We are looking to raise local money and volunteers to complete these efforts. We've had lots of great turnout. People have helped us make the truck compatible to the trailer and the trailer compatible to the truck, and hook up generators and redo the electrical and paint the vehicle. So there's been a lot of support for the fire department in these efforts. We're looking to educate people on the function of the program goals, and what our outreach efforts will be in this endeavor. The fire department has just done a terrific job. I think several of you have visited that trailer and seen it in progress, and it's going to be something we can really be proud of, and it's virtually no investment of public funds, so it's really a terrific thing. Lastly, I wanted to talk with you a little bit about redevelopment. As you know, the governor included redevelopment in his speech yesterday, and we've heard a lot about that now in the last couple of days as the state budget is beginning to evolve. We know you have a special meeting scheduled for Friday for interviews with planning commissioners and parks and recreation commissioners. And I would ask you to schedule yet additional special meeting following the current meeting, both of the redevelopment agency and the city council, so that we could make sure that we have as many of the contractual obligations in place for our redevelopment bond funds as possible. We'll have some staff reports and contracts available for you on Friday, and we'll have some staff there to support the meeting. We'd ask that you do that. Mark Curran from Piper Jaffray is here in the audience. Talk a little bit about redevelopment and about the bond issue we did this last year. Let me introduce Mr. Curran.
Welcome, Mr. Curran.
Good evening. It's a pleasure to be here. Excuse me for coming here.
Push. And when Wade and I scheduled this meeting about 3 weeks ago, I was looking forward to a very brief, upbeat synopsis of how well the bond issue went. I know you all got letters from me about when it was sold back in August, but I just wanted to come to a public meeting and chat about that for a minute. So I'm going to do that for just a minute, and then I'm going to talk about the state budget issues for a couple more minutes before letting you get on to all the serious things you have to do tonight. Our market timing could not have been better. We sold right into what was a wonderful summer-long bull market. We got an all-in interest rate of under 5%. On the bonds for a 30-year term. It was better than we had expected, and again, could not have gone better, in good part due to the great job you had done over the years in establishing your reserve fund policies and working through them and working with and listening to Rochelle and Wade on having good reserves that made such a difference in getting the AA- rating. If the bonds had been issued 4 or 5 months later, more around now, the interest rate would have been, instead of the under 5%, probably could assault on state redevelopment, or on city redevelopment agencies and county redevelopment agencies throughout the state. This is unprecedented in both the size and audacity. The state proposal, because the voters of California have adopted Prop 1A to protect local government revenues, have adopted Prop 22 in November to protect redevelopment agencies and their revenues. So now the new attempt is simply to wipe out, just literally, wipe out of existence all redevelopment agencies in the state as of July 1. Your existing debt obligations would be protected. Your existing agreements that would be in effect would be protected. So the bonds that you have done back in 04 and the most recent ones, they would all be fine in terms of repaying them. But as you will see on Friday, the staff did come up with some great ideas today in terms of providing some protections and taking some official action before hopefully anything is put in the hopper by the state to protect things moving forward a bit. But the bottom line is what the state is saying is, again, to just eliminate all redevelopment agencies because the voters of this state have voted repeatedly to protect the money. So they can't go on a frontal assault, so this is a new assault. Going forward, it would basically shut down all redevelopment programs as of July 1. This is the greatest challenge, in my opinion, to cities and counties in terms of their local control and operations in the last 50 years. It truly is an unprecedented act, and it's one that the state is hoping to wrap up within 90 days without any extensive debate, any extensive discussions or input from local governments. It's really going to be up to all of you, the five of you up there in the City Council and all the folks in the citizens in the chamber that can help, to let your state legislators and the other state legislators know this kind of rushed act is just unacceptable. If the state wants to look at redevelopment and see how there may be some more cooperation with the state budget, that's fine. Let's do a studies. Let's look at analysis over this for the next year or two, but not act within a 90-day period. Redevelopment in California has a 50-year history of successful programs in over 400 cities. You just look at Colony Square, you look at the major streets in your downtown, you look at the work that you're being able to afford to do on City Hall. All of those things would not have happened but for your redevelopment program. And I'm sure you know many other projects, the Lewis Bridge, the pedestrian bridge, the creek work that's been done. All of those things were due to redevelopment, and those kind of improvements going forward would literally be wiped off the slate if this measure is adopted by the state legislature. So again, I would ask all of you, and I'm sure you will, to follow through with your legislators and to do everything we can to delay and eliminate this action 2 to 3 to maybe 4% of the state budget problem, which is not your problem. You didn't create it, is a remarkable action. So with that basic summary, if there are any questions on that, I know your staff is going to have a lot more information on Friday, and literally the rollout of information on this, because the formal budget proposal just came out on Monday, yesterday. The additional information that's going to be rolling out every day will be substantial.
Thank you, Mr. Curran. We have some council questions. Council Member Clay.
Yes. Just to be sure, the vote is just to state that redevelopment no longer exists, period.
Yes.
And is that a two-thirds vote?
It's a 50%. At least what we've been told so far, it's a 50% vote by the legislature.
So it's 50% plus one?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Other council member questions? Again, we thank you, Mr. Curran.
Thank you all so much, and good luck on preserving this wonderful program for your community and other ones throughout the state. And again, thank you so much for your help on the August bond issue. It was a great success. I hope I'll be back in 3 or 4 years doing another one for you for your redevelopment program.
Thank you.
Take care, everyone.
Well, it was very commendable to have an outside agency give such a high rating of the city, and we would all love to take credit for it, but we know the credit substantially goes to Rochelle Rickard and her staff and all of our city staff that have worked so hard to do a good job on our budget and all those components. So again, thank you, Rochelle, and all of your team. I do want to take up that item regarding a special meeting that was brought up by the city manager. I'd like to hear first from our chair of our redevelopment agency, Roberta Fonzi, your thoughts on that.
Well, I think these are hard times, and this is a bolt out of the blue to hear that our redevelopment agency may be going away in July. I think we need to gather our information, take actions to preserve what we do have, and possibly keep our money at home if that is possible. So I am happy to call that meeting on Friday and hope we'll have some of the public here to attend as well.
Other council comments? Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes, after listening to the conference call today from the governor's aide and just kind of all that's going on, there's a lot of information out there. There's kind of like a broad brush of just a blast of kind of what they've got in mind. So as the information comes out, it is very important that we do as a city, as a group, the city staff, city council, all of us together, we wade through this and we come up with a plan that
is basically the result of the redevelopment agency. I think some time ago I put a little presentation on, and over the last 5 or 6 years, there's like $15 or $16 million worth of improvements in town. And I think we're going to put a little program on to help the citizens of the community really understand what it is. It's probably one of the more important things that has come up recently. We hope that you get involved and back us on it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Clay.
Yeah, well, the state has a history of balancing their budget on the backs of cities. Unfortunately, we have to balance our budget. We don't have anywhere else to go. So, you know, this looks like it's going to be a fight, and hopefully we'll come out a winner, a partial winner anyway.
Thank you. My understanding is we can do this by consensus to give direction?
Yes, we can set that meeting by consensus. What I'd ask you is maybe let's keep the time flexible. We have a variety of conflicts between council members and throughout that day and with staff members. And so maybe it would be possible in the middle of the interviews to take a short break and do this meeting and come back. So let's just say we're going to, if there's a consensus, to set the special meeting for those agencies on Friday, and then we'll see where we can make them work in the time frame and notice it tomorrow.
Thank you. And I assume it's fine with council members to maybe have the city manager work with I as mayor and Roberta Fonzi as chair of redevelopment agency, and we'll pin that down to make sure everyone can make that. Okay. Question by Councilman Fonzi.
Then will we have a date and time certain for the public so they will know when to attend?
Yes.
Thank you.
And that'll be publicized tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yes. Thank you. Very good. Other updates from the city manager?
No, there are none.
Thank you. We will now move on to community forum, an opportunity for anyone to speak on any item under our jurisdiction that's not on the agenda. Now, it's customary that we allow some time for our representative from the Ministerial Association here today. If he was willing to come forward, thank you and welcome.
It's good to be here. And Tom Gaddis, one of the local pastors, has encouraged me to be here tonight and to pray for our city. And from what has been said so far, I can see that that is an important thing to do.
We appreciate it. Could you state your name for the record, please?
Yes. My name is Terry Mathis, and I'm the chaplain at the Atascadero. And we ask that you would continue to bless America, that you would bless this country, our leadership from the top, all the way to our local governments, and that you would especially look to the Central Coast, that you would provide more small business, job opportunities, and success among those who are striving to find their way in this difficult economy. And Lord, we ask that you would provide wisdom and understanding among those here tonight who are coping with the threats to the redevelopment agency and the funds that would be made available through that. We ask that you would provide in a rich way, that you would touch the thinking of our new governor, Jerry Brown, and others working with him, and that you would yet allow the burdens and benefits of society to be spread in such a way that we would have the resources that we need here in Atascadero to continue to build this wonderful city and to expand. We thank you for the recent development of the library and the new building that they will have to serve this community. So in all of these matters, we place this local government into your hands, asking that you will bless and conserve and to allow us to prosper. We thank you for what you will do and for what you have already done. We thank you and praise you for your goodness. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, and congratulations on the new election, people.
Thank you.
My name is Marty Brown. I live in Atascadero. Pacific Wildlife Care in Morro Bay. Are you ready with the disc? Okay. Pacific Wildlife Care in Morro Bay is a place of refuge where injured, orphaned, and pollution-damaged wildlife are expertly cared for, rehabilitated, and returned to the wild. I have volunteered there for the past 3 years. Recently, we have in the Swan's Gizzard. With the generous professional help of the veterinarians at Atascadero Pet Hospital and our team at Pacific Wildlife Care, she's looking like she just might make it back to Atascadero Lake. We always try to return rehabilitated wildlife back to where they were found, and herein lies the caution. There are probably a lot more lost lead sinkers in the lake. Swans with their long necks scoop the bottom looking for pebbles and grit to digest their food. It is easy to see how a lead sinker could be picked up. People who fish at Atascadero Lake aren't out there trying to kill swans. They're out there to relax and enjoy the lake. And many are not aware of the toxicity of lead sinkers to wildlife. Speaking of relaxing at the lake, there is nothing more calming than to watch the swan and her mate sailing around the lake in the morning or afternoon sun. Many folks who attend the concerts in the park have enjoyed watching the pair as music is played. Because of the millions of birds and other animals that die each year of lead poisoning from fragments of toxic lead left behind in game and non-game animals by hunters using lead ammunition, federal regulations went into effect in 1991 requiring non-lead shot for hunting waterfowl. Consequently, there are certified manufacturers of non-lead ammunition and fishing tackle. Fishing weights are already on the market made with non-toxic materials such as tin, ceramic, glass, bismuth, and steel. My questions to you are, does Atascadero have an ordinance banning lead fishing tackle? And if not, can we please get one? And also, could we please have informational signs posted at the lake banning the use of lead sinkers and the reasons for it? Discarded fishing lines and hooks are also a hazard for waterfowl, as well as dogs and children who play at our park. There have been informational signs posted at the piers all along our coast to remind fishermen to pick up and take away their lines and hooks.
Thank you, Ms. Brown.
I'm almost finished, sir. Please, bear with me. One moment. There are already signposts available around our lake that could be used for this purpose. I thank you, and the Swans thank you if they could. And I want to emphasize that I am not a spokesperson for Pacific Wildlife Care. My comments and concerns are the same for many people who care for wildlife. These beautiful
dangerous lead level in the Swan, one wonders how high the lead level is in the lake water, in the lake. How many lead weights have been lost and are sitting in the lake bottom emitting lead into the water? I would like the staff to research to find out if the lead level is high in the lake and what the likelihood is that all fish in the lake have a high lead level. Our neighbors are catching fish in the lake, and I imagine that some of them are eating this fish, which could be unsafe for them and especially the children if the levels are high. I have been in touch with the city manager and Marsha Torgensen about the condition of the lake itself, the banks of the lake in particular. Having visited the pristine lake at Lodi, which is part of the Delta drainage system, I asked them why our lake is so weed infested and that non-indigenous trees are so out of control. Their response was that state law does not allow them to interfere with the growth on the banks. This is in stark contrast to Lodi Lake, which obviously is in the same state. If Lodi Lake is groomed for public enjoyment, why isn't our Atascadero Lake? And I'd like an answer to that tonight. I have another observation. Also, I have a question about the baseball soccer field facilities at Paloma Park. Due to raised water rates, I have read that it's proposed for some of the green area to be eliminated. I wondered what happened to the recommendations, which were exciting recommendations, by, I believe, ADE. They did an economic study for the city and recommended changes that would be a magnet for tourist economy, including the recommendation to develop Paloma Fields into state-of-the-art softball and or soccer fields. So I'd also like to take the answer to that tonight. I'm really excited to hear that Colony Square is going to be opening soon after all this time. I am disappointed to hear that the residential part of it, the elimination of apartments, I believe, along with the retail, which would have made it a lifestyle center, will not be happening. So can you clarify that for me? And if this is happening, will there be second stories on the retail? Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, next speaker.
Good evening, Mayor O'Malley, council, staff, and those present. My name is Judy Vick. I'm here to talk with you today about PG&E smart meters. The New York Times reports that opposition to PG&E smart meters is sweeping the nation. And Bloomberg Business Week states Duke Energy Supervisor Frank Meacham said that after he had a smart meter installed, his bill doubled. California Senator Flores demanded a halt to smart meter installations, stating that people think these meters are fraud meters. The Consumer Federation of California attacked the position of investor-owned utilities seeking to avoid regulatory liability for abuses of private consumer data taken from smart meters by non-utility third parties. Also, PG&E has admitted that smart meters interfere with arc fault interrupters, which are designed to protect against electrical fires. Homeowner organizations are fighting the health risks of radio frequency radiation emitted by the meters. The World Health Organization does not give an assurance of safety for the current radio frequency radiation exposure limit set by the FCC. Rather, it is in the process of deciding if RF is a carcinogen or a neurotoxin and will not have a formal report until next year. Prudent avoidance of electromagnetic radiation has been adopted in U.S. states including California, Colorado, Hawaii, New York, Ohio, Texas, Wisconsin, as well as in Australia and Sweden. In 2009, the President's Cancer Panel reported or advocated adoption of the precautionary principle to protect people when in doubt, and our very county Board of Supervisors made a declaration to implement the precautionary principle in 2001. On November 19th, the California Public Utility Commission began an investigation into the consumer complaints of health hazards from smart meters. On December 6th, Assemblyman Jared Huffman introduced Assembly Bill 37, which allows the CPUC to allow customers to opt out of the wireless smart meter and provides for a wired alternative, which makes it more safe and secure. Cities such as Chattanooga, Tennessee, are using them currently. I urge you to do as Morro Bay City did recently and enact a resolution to delay further installation of PG&E smart meters until Assembly Bill 37 has been addressed. I've emailed you copies of the Morro Bay resolution and the county and other city ordinances. I'd appreciate it if you would take a look at that. I think I sent it before your board changed over, so I'd be happy to resend if necessary. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome, next speaker.
Hi, my name is Linda Ikeda. I have a Bachelor of Science and used to work with stroke patients as an occupational therapist. I have lived in Atascadero 17 years. Andrew Weil, Harvard-trained and internationally known medical doctor, says that electromagnetic pollution may be the most significant form of pollution human activity has produced. Commission, for every complaint filed, how many have not complained? These meters radiate microwaves considered lethal by the Stanford Research Institute horizontally 360 degrees. They can transmit over 2 miles. Even the neighbor smart meters can and has affected people. In Atascadero, where PG&E has been installing smart meters, neighbors have complained of a sudden increase in fibromyalgia symptoms, sleep problems, and headache. It turned out that smart meters were installed in the neighborhood about the same time, but not yet at these people's homes. Following is one of several complaints listed at emfsafetynetwork.org. I have been in the ER overnight 3 times this week with unexplained sickness. We recently had a smart meter installed, and these symptoms began about a week after. Extreme stress, diagnosed TIAs or small strokes, dizziness, headaches, nausea, and fainting. I mentioned this to a doctor, and he suggested that the smart meters may have something to do with it because the hospital has had quite a rise in illness of this kind reporting to the ER. Will there be even more sicknesses at our hospitals when the wireless antennas and the rest of the infrastructure is installed and running? Yet another blanket of wireless emissions? Each home smart meter will act something like a cell tower that transmits wireless frequencies as often as every few seconds, using lethal frequencies and transmitting utility usage from house to house. There is no research proving that this technology is safe. Because there is significant public concern about health and other issues here and around the state, I urge you to seriously consider an emergency halt to the deployment of smart meters and related equipment like Morro Bay and Fairfax did. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Council, and thank you, members of the community. Marty Gertis in Atascadero. I come with just a few notes. What I'd like to do is give you a personal rendition of how this issue of smart meters has affected me. First of all, I'd like to say I consider it definitely a moral and ethical issue, because PG&E has overridden complaints, has poo-pooed anyone suggesting that the engineering is faulty, and so there's been little recourse except for raising voices either in the media, throughout our communities, and do like the three other communities of mine. Had problems with her refrigerator as well as her washer dryer. Actually, the washer, the washing machine would go on at odd hours. She had it set, it was on a timer, and apparently something happened as a result of the smart meter, and the washing machine would go on in the middle of the night, not intentionally. And so these kinds of stories, and you hear that Supervisor Meacham, his bill, his utility bill, went up double. And we hear these stories over and over again. And I do not believe that the members of this community can afford, either health-wise, security-wise, or financially, what PG&E is attempting to do. And that is to just roll over without consideration of, you know, review and independent audit. So I really am hopeful that the council and other members of the community will add their voices to what's happening here. I know many feel that they're being held hostage by PG&E because of the power plant. And I'd like to say, please, they're benefiting from its existence. We don't have to feel sorry for them if anything happens there. So again, please just give it some thought and consideration, because if it is a good idea, it will benefit us if we do it 6 months, a year from now. In the meantime, we've given it our thoughtful, considered review.
Thank you, Ms.
Evaluation.
Curtis.
Thank you.
Welcome. Next speaker.
Good evening. My name is Ken Millette, and my wife and I have lived here for 30 years. I'm wearing two hats tonight. The only reason I came was to say thank you. I'm wearing two hats tonight. One is as the guy who plays E.G. Lewis at community functions. And I wanted you to know how much I enjoy that, and thank you for supporting all that stuff. Those of us who get to play those roles at Colony Days every year really have a good time. And I hope you always support that kind of stuff. It's good for kids. It's good for adults, and I expect to see all five of you taking a part. More, you know, we can put you in a costume, and you'd look really great. I think that would be a good idea. It was a lot of fun. So thank you. Please continue to support the programs that you have in place, that we have in Atascadero, that are good for families, are wonderful. And I'm representing those three congregations tonight who wanted me to come and say thank you for the programs and things that you offered. We figured the best way we could do that is to present each one of you with a copy of our own proclamation on the family. We're very much into families, and what you're doing is wonderful. So we're very grateful to be part of a city that supports and fosters healthy families. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much for coming out, and please give those to our city clerk, and we'll make sure we each get one. And on behalf of all of the city council, as E.G. Lewis, you will always have free ice cream at O'Malley's Ice Cream Parlor during Colony Days.
That's why I come every year.
Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. I'm Grenda Ernst from the Friends of the Library. Friends of the Library is on a roll, or I should say we continue to be on a roll. As probably most of you know, escrow closed on our new library to be on December 29th. That's the building across the street at 6555 Capistrano Avenue. And one of the things I'd like to do this evening is to invite all of you and to invite the community to the open house that we're going to have at that building on January 23rd from 2 to 4 p.m. We'll be giving tours. We'll have entertainment of some sort, refreshments of some sort. But I'm sure what you most want to see is the building. So we're anxious to show it to you. Please do show up. I'd also like to tell you about our next Dancing with the Stars event, which will be March 12th at the Pavilion. Last year was the first Dancing with the Stars, which was a great success. It was a lot of fun. People from the community, from all walks of life in the community, participated. And the stars were local notables who were taught a dance and then did the dance and got votes in terms of money to determine the winner. This year, some of our stars are Ray and Marlene Cordero, who are local physicians, Jack and Natalie Doris, who own Colby Jack's, Jeannie Malik, who is a real estate person, 5th District Supervisor Jim Patterson, Sharon Rademacher, who has a hair design salon, John Webster, CEO of Star Nacelles. We'll be glad to see you there, and all of the stars will be there to autograph and shake your hand. Another event that will be a lot of fun for children in the community is going to be held at the O'Malley Portala Inn on April 30th, and we're calling that the Central Coast Children's Classic. It's focused for children 3 to 10 and their parents and their grandparents. There'll be children-oriented activities of various sorts, a treasure hunt, a Mad Hatter Tea Party, the O'Malley Ice Cream Parlor, just to name a few. So I think that this will be a really cool thing for children, and be sure to bring your kids or your grandchildren. And then the last thing that we have on the docket so far this year is the secret garden tour of gardens on the San Marcos Ridge. That's going to occur on May 7th. It's a self-guided tour of approximately 9 gardens on the ridge belonging to people that are just avid, crazy gardeners. So we're thinking that this is going to be a lot of fun as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Ernst. Welcome, next speaker.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council. My name is Leslie Halls, and I am the Executive Director of the San Luis Obispo County Builders Exchange, and we have an office here in Atascadero. I just wanted to say how much I appreciate personally being involved with the city and working with the city staff and the community that is working with Bernard's Brothers for the renovation of the Rotunda building. This is an incredibly huge, complex project. I think the estimated construction is $46 million. And it's really encouraging to see the city take a proactive approach to hiring local contractors and keeping our local contractors informed of what needs to be done there. We have the plans available at the Builders Exchange. They are also available online. And I just wanted to say I think that Bernard's Brothers is doing a good job, and I think the city staff is doing a good job. And I know most folks come up to either talk about their event or complain about something, but I just want to say keep up the good work. We're very satisfied with the way things are going so far. And it's encouraging, especially with construction unemployment being so high, to see a project like this.
South Coast News, under the titles Kelly Gearhart, Fraud, Arson, and Betrayal, and Gearhart's Control of Atascadero. More recently, an actual video report was released on KCCN.tv under the title Gearhart's Grip on the County Was a Corrupting Influence. I urge all San Luis Obispo County residents to go to these websites, calcoastnews.com and KCCN.tv, view the reports, and judge for yourself whether or not our community was swindled of our tax dollars, and in some cases, people's life savings, all with the complicity and or tacit support of certain public officials. In respect for the holiday season, I didn't come to the meetings in December and speak to these issues, but I am here tonight requesting that each of you clarify your roles in the disaster that befell Atascadero. And I'll remind you of the adage that silence is often deafening. Many know that when I was on the council, I tried to alert the public that the train was about to jump the track. And yes, I blew the whistle to the law. Several of you, chiefly Wade McKinney, Tom O'Malley, and Jerry Clay, were obviously, in my opinion, running interference for Gearhart. Why was I picking on Kelly? Those were your exact words, Mr. Clay. Why was I picking on Kelly? Roberta Fonzi, Bob Kelly, you're not immune from this discussion. I've seen your voting record on Gearhart projects, and Roberta, your own husband told me that the recall could be made to go away if I made a public apology to Kelly Gearhart. Well, that's not going to happen. Now back to the articles. Chief among the contentions is that Gearhart was paying off public officials, forging inspection documents, illegally exploiting the rules of our own low-cost housing program, Now, some of you may ask, who helped corroborate the facts, the suspicions? It was Marion Warner, Kelly Gearhart's own stepmother, who had a ringside seat to our fiasco. Let me share some of the excerpts from the articles. Warner said Gearhart would brag to his father and to her that he had paid off public officials such as Atascadero City Manager Wade McKinney and County Assessor Tom Bordenaro. During family visits, she said that Gearhart would boast to his father that and her that Atascadero City Councilman Tom O'Malley and Jerry Clay were his guys.
Repeat your last name. I want to make
G-R-I-S-E.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have a couple of things to read, so I hope that's all right as well. We've heard from Marty Brown a little bit on the lead issue, and maybe some of you are wondering, is it really that big of a deal? Researcher studies at New Hampshire, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan estimate that up to 57% of loon deaths and up to 31% of trumpeter swan deaths and up to 25% of bald eagle deaths are due to lead poisoning. Lead is responsible for poisoning deaths in 25 different species, and yes, that's really a big issue. An estimated one fishing weight is lost every 6 hours of fishing per person, according to the North American Journal of Fisheries Management in their 2006 report. But it's just like one small weight. Could it really be all that bad? Fishing tackle manufacturers produce nearly 480 million sinkers every year, and 98% of those are made of lead. This translates to nearly 2,700 metric tons of lead being used by American anglers in the United States. Most of the new sinkers, in addition, are used to replace old lead sinkers that are lost. So what can we do about it, and why is it, or is it, a big deal? A good first step is to replace your lead tackle with safer alternatives such as nickel alloy, bismuth, and tin. Other materials such as ceramic, densified plastic, pewter, and stainless steel are available. Most tackle shops already carry these things. So you can read this on Google. Why bother having me say this? My words are really as a concerned citizen, as a participant in your park, as someone who brings my dog to play and young children. Having heard the dangers of lead in the entertainment and public areas of the park, I'm really concerned that, I guess, this swan is sort of a bellwether, and we're lucky it was a swan that had this poisoning and not a child or an endangered species. The concern I have is that now these things have come about on KSBY, have been in the newspapers, and have been brought before the council. The concern I have is that if we don't do something about it, that there's the possibility that if...
Welcome, our next speaker, the dancing supervisor. And good job, too.
That's right. Mayor O'Malley, members of the council, speaking of dancing, Grinda Ernst mentioned that I would be participating in the program again this year, as is Captain Bill White, but there's no truth to the rumor that we're dancing together. I wanted to make that clear. He's way too tall.
He is too tall, yes.
But I also want to mention, I've heard that Mr. Jim Lewis and his wife will actually be opening the program, and they were the winners last year in the fundraising competition, so it'll be good to see them back. I don't think you're competing, though, but they will be opening the show, and she's a professional dancer, and Jim's learned something by osmosis or somehow, and she manages to get him through that. But anyway, it's a great event for a great cause, a lot of fun, and I do encourage all of you to come if you possibly can. What I wanted to speak to tonight, when I was here at the meeting on December 14th, former Mayor Fonzie was giving a recap of the city's accomplishments for 2010, and also listed several things that were on the to-do list for 2011, and one of the things that she mentioned caught my ear, and I wanted to just remind Mr. Frace and members of the council, if they're not aware, that a couple of years ago, and this item is secondary units as a form of affordable housing, a couple of years ago, the county held a competition with local architects to design secondary units, and we would select plans from these various architects, winners from this program that we had, and make them available to citizens throughout the county. And these plans, and we have them that range from 200 square feet to about 800 square feet, we have 11 completed plans that have been engineered and approved. So if someone comes in who wants to build a secondary unit and will use one of those plans, they're ready to go, basically. And so they get expedited. Our county contact is Mr. Chuck Stevenson, and I believe he has in the past talked with Mr. Frace about that. And I just wanted to put that back out there since I heard that it was one of the projects that you want to pursue in 2011. And I know our staff would be happy to work with your staff and perhaps make these same plans available to the city of Atascadero.
Thank you, Supervisor Patterson. And thank you for your dancing and your support of second units. Seeing no others approach the lectern, we will close public comment, bring it back to council. Now, I did keep track of the questions. I don't know if staff would like to work through those at this time or if you need to do some research and get back to folks. Would you like to go through the list? I assume you kept track of those as well.
I kept track of those as well. I think we need to get back with many of them. Obviously, I think the first one's dealing with lake water quality and the expansion of Paloma Park. Our budgeting items, and given the news, that we're likely not to have additional resources to put at those areas. Colony Square, we don't know what the potential redesign of Colony Square would be, and we would look at that in the future. And I think the city is as dismayed as others that the residential market has fallen apart. I think those responses, we could develop more information if you would like, or if you, perhaps you could give us direction. If you'd like more information about prohibiting lead at the lake, we could provide more information. On the budget items, you're going to see those many times this year. Smart meters, you'd have to provide us some direction, and I think we'll look into the model plans. But if there are other council directions you want me to follow up on, I will.
Sure. Any other items you would comment on?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a question, Tom.
Councilman Clay, go ahead.
Could you test the water for lead, though? That seemed like it'd be a pretty simple thing to do.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, and if we could work our way through that list a little bit, I did want to acknowledge, I thought it was commendable that we gave credit to Atascadero Pet Center, again, a local business stepping up an seminar or some information for council members on that, and I think they will be coming around. I think that's a good thing to participate in, and we could make sure that's open to the public if we have an opportunity for them to come and speak, and we could get some information maybe additionally from the public and from PG&E on that. So I would wait till you hear from PG&E. I know they're going to be contacting every city, and we could make sure that the public is informed about that. I do appreciate folks coming out with so many positive remarks. Any other comments by council? We'll move right on to the next agenda item. Okay, well, thank you all. Next item on the agenda is public hearings. And number one is second reading Title IV and Title VIII local building codes and fire protection code adoption. Staff report, please.
Yes, thank you, Mayor and Council. This is the second reading. You've already introduced this item for first reading, but due to the scope of this code text change, it does require a public hearing on the second reading. So this is a second reading to both Title IV and Title VIII of the Municipal Code. We are modifying both the Fire Code and the California Building Code to bring them in alignment with model state codes that were adopted for the 2010. In terms of the staff's recommendation, we are recommending that it is adopted for second reading. There is one minor clarification that we're requesting the council make. It's to section 903.2.3.2 on page 48. The building department and fire department read this section and realized that the "and" was somewhat confusing, wanted to replace that with "provided" and also add a slash "or" just to clarify the intent of this condition. So with that, that'll conclude staff's report. We do need to open this for public hearing, and we would recommend that that change be introduced into the final form of the code text.
Thank you. First item is ex parte communications. I'll just go from my left to my right if anyone has spoken to you about any of these agenda items, and then we'll open up to council questions first.
No ex parte.
None? Thank you. Any council member questions before we go to the public? Councilman Fonzie.
Mr. Frace, could you explain why the second story is considered a hazard or has been added? Is this a higher risk?
Any public input on this item? Seeing no one come forward, I'll close public comment and open to a motion.
I'll make the motion that the council adopt the second reading of Title IV, Title VIII, Local Building Code and Fire Protection Code adoption.
Second.
Second. And that's as amended by staff?
Yes.
We have a motion by Councilwoman Fonzie, seconded by Councilmember Clay. Let's do a roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Next item is a management report. First is Eagle Ranch Annexation and Specific Plan EIR Consultant Qualifications Listing. Mr. City Manager.
Excuse me. I think that Mr. Frace is going to take this one.
Oh, we're going to turn over to the experts. Thank you. Take it away, Mr. Frace.
Yes, thank you, Mayor and Council, once again. This item before you tonight is a part of the Eagle Ranch Annexation Project. This is adoption of a list of qualified consultants to prepare a EIR for the project. We are recommending that the council adopt a list of the top three most qualified firms to prepare an EIR. We have issued a statement of qualifications. And secondly, to authorize the city manager to negotiate a contract with the number one ranked consultant, which is Michael Brandeman and Associates. Just a little bit of background on this. This is part of the Eagle Ranch Specific Plan Annexation. It's approximately 3,500 acres on the southwest side of town. It will be master planned as a residential and resort property. The current general plan policies support annexation of this property to the city of Atascadero. It's also recognized by San Luis Obispo County and LAFCO as an area that will be annexed to the city of Atascadero. On the screen is a map that shows the location of the project. You can see Atascadero to the north. This is the Eagle Ranch property. This is the entire property. Only half of the property will be annexed to the city, which is the 3,500 acres. This is the map of the area. You'll see all the lots that are shown there. Those are actually existing lots. This is part of the original E.G. Lewis Atascadero colony. There's 452 historic colony lots of record that are out there. The project intent is to cluster and rearrange this. We actually have a lot of work to do with the specific plan. What we've talked to the council about in August when we laid out the process was beginning a process of community meetings and public outreach that will also include council and planning commission meetings and workshops. The idea is to have the public and the commission and council work together to help refine the project plans and to discuss as many project issues and impacts so that we can come to as much consensus as possible on what the best way for this site is developed. We see the next 6 months as being the key for doing a lot of that work. So that's what we're moving forward with. Now, part of that process, as we also discussed with the council in August, was to concurrently begin the technical studies for the EIR. We want to make sure that we don't have to redo the plans later when we discover some sort of environmental issue or constraint. So by hiring the environmental consultant now to start to develop the impartial third-party environmental studies like traffic studies and biological studies, we will then be able to shape the project to avoid the impacts. Rather than identifying them and trying to figure out ways to mitigate them later, it would be much better to identify the impacts now and figure out how to design a project around them as much as possible. So in terms of the EIR process, that is part of the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA. A project of this scale does require an EIR. As I just mentioned, it will be a concurrent process. The council has endorsed this process at your August 10th meeting. The cost of the EIR and the specific plan will be the responsibility of the project applicant. The EIR consultant, though, works for the city of Atascadero, so it's clearly a third-party analysis for the city. What happens is the applicant will put money into an account at the city that the city will then use to pay the EIR consultant. So although the city will be managing and directing the EIR, we will not be paying for it. In terms of the process, we did issue a statement, a request for statements of qualifications, or an RFQ. We received 12 qualification packages back to the city. We set up a staff selection committee that consisted of myself, the city attorney, and the city engineer to review the submittals. There were 6 firms that were selected for secondary interviews. Of those interviewed by the selection panel, which included presentations, questions, and reference checks, the top 3 were in this order: Michael Brandeman Associates, number 1, LSA Associates, number 2, RBF Consulting, number 3. Michael Brandeman was selected as most qualified based on their work experience in this types of projects, their references, and the quality of the staff that would be assigned to this project. They are currently under contract for the city doing another EIR for us for the Del Rio Road commercial area. Once the an acceptable scope of work and fee is developed, staff would then execute that contract and we would begin at full speed the Eagle Ranch EIR process. That concludes staff's report. Michael Brandeman from, or Jason Brandeman from Michael Brandeman Associates is in the audience tonight and is available to answer any questions that the council may have.
Thank you. Let's begin with just questions council has for staff. Any council questions? Councilwoman Fonzie.
I was wondering, when you developed the criteria for selecting your EIR consultant, whether you considered that this is rather a new product that we're doing. It's not a regular EIR. It's a combination of the specific plan and the EIR kind of working together. Was that a criteria in choosing that they had already done that kind of work before?
Yes, that was described in the request for qualifications. We described in detail what we had discussed with the council in terms of the concurrent process. We asked all the applicants to provide examples of similar projects and processes they've worked on, and just to give us an idea of how they thought it would work. Brandeman has done this before. They had a high level of confidence in their ability to do this. They were very supportive of this approach. They agreed with the council that it's much better to do a lot of this work up front than to try to fix a project later after you find out what the issues are.
And one last question. Will the EIR consultant be conducting the community outreach meetings, or will that be the city?
The community outreach meetings will be a joint effort between the applicant, which will be represented by RRM and supported by staff. The EIR consultant, they'll attend and they'll monitor those, but they will not be the lead in those.
Thank you.
Other council questions? Seeing none, I'm going to open it up to the public, and we would normally ask the applicant if they'd like to share anything first. And I don't think council have any questions for the applicant at this time. So we can open up to anyone of the public. Welcome, Supervisor Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. I've had the opportunity over the past many months to attend two or three community meetings that the applicant's representative, RRM, has held, seeking input from the community on what they would like to see in the project. And I'm encouraged now, not giving up the land, but placing a conservation easement over another 3,000 acres on the south side of the ranch and putting it in a conservation easement, which I think is admirable that that's happening. So roughly half of the ranch will be preserved in perpetuity through a conservation easement. I like the idea that the applicant in the city is pursuing, and that is to actually get input up front, do some of the studies up front. They have enough of a plan design for the project that they can do enough scoping, I guess, and maybe Mr. Frey can speak to that. The project is well enough defined to actually evaluate in terms of the potential impacts, and the idea of doing the final plan for the project to avoid as many identified impacts as possible, I think, is a good strategy, and I'm looking forward to seeing the project move forward. I think it would be a real asset for the city of Atascadero.
Thank you, Supervisor Patterson. Welcome, Commissioner Colomarino.
Good evening, Mayor O'Malley and members of the City Council. My name is Len Colomarino. I'm a resident of Atascadero. I just want to raise a question here so that we get it out into the open, and there hopefully we can obviate any issues or potential controversies coming from this. We're being asked, or you're being asked, to approve as the firm doing the EIR here, the same firm that's doing the EIR for Walmart, as I understand it. And we saw from the staff report that the work they've done on Walmart has apparently been favorably perceived by the staff. They've been responsive, and that's encouraging. But I guess I want to. I don't know of any legal issue associated with them doing the two biggest private projects at the same time, the EIRs for those projects, working for the city on both of them. And I don't know of any issue. I don't see why there should be a problem. But it occurs to me that there may be some perception in the public that needs to be addressed in advance. The EIR, that's something that's encouraging. But I think it would be good to get it out on the table. It would be good to hear the city attorney confirm that there's no legal issue. There don't appear to be any ethical issues or any other problems out there. But again, somebody, I could foresee somebody saying, what's going on here? Do they have a lock on this? They have a monopoly on the city's business here for EIRs and big projects? I don't think it's a problem, but it might be better to address it in advance. So anyway, I think adopting staff's recommendation is a good thing to do, and I would just like to make sure this issue is covered in advance. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Colomarino. Any other member of the public wishing to speak on this item? Seeing none, I will close public comment, bring it back to council. And I would like to begin with that, since a question has been raised. Thank you for teaching me a word I haven't heard in a while. Again, we want to obviate any issues. And though Mr. Colomarino did not find any legal concerns or ethical concerns and thinks it is appropriate, his concern for public perception on this is, of course, why we go through a public hearing process such as this, so we have opportunity for input. I assume that legal counsel has reviewed this, and could you comment on those issues raised?
Yes, I can. There would be no legal conflict with respect to having the Brandeman firm do the EIRs with respect to both the Walmart Del Rio project and Eagle Ranch. And as a matter of fact, the fact that the city has had experience with the Brandeman firm on the Walmart project is, and it has been a very positive experience, is, I think, one of the reasons, as indicated by Mr. Frace, on why they're being recommended for your selection this evening. Not only the quality of their work, but the fact that they are familiar with the city, familiar with working with city staff, and their responsiveness is going to result, we think, in a very efficient and hopefully some cost savings that would be involved rather than bringing on a firm that does not have that background.
Thank you. Well, I certainly agree with Mr. Colmarino raising those issues, and that is something we want to be very careful of. I also appreciate Supervisor Patterson sharing some of that process. As we heard when this first came to us, I was very pleased to hear the wide-based community support and
EIR is just completing, and the Eagle Ranch is going to just start, so I don't see that they're doing them at the exact same time.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Other council member comments? Or I would then at this time entertain a motion.
I would make a motion to approve the ranking of the top three qualified consultants to prepare an EIR for Eagle Ranch specific plan and authorize the city manager to negotiate and execute a contract with the number one ranked consultant. If an acceptable contract cannot be reached, the city manager is authorized to negotiate with the next qualified consultant.
On second that motion.
The list.
Second. A motion by Councilmember Sturdivant, seconded by Councilmember Clay. Isn't it great to have a young man on here that can actually read the screen?
That's great. Yeah.
We very much appreciate that.
Notice that.
Motion on the floor. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda under managed reports, item C2, Historic City Hall Project Contract Awards. Staff?
Thank you, Mayor and City Council. Tonight, the item you have before you is an update on Historic City Hall and to award three contracts. Actually, we're just going to award one contract and amend two others. So first of all, I'd like to give you an update on what's going on at City Hall. I know it's frustrating for a lot of people. A lot of the work is going on downstairs in the basement, behind those green fences that are to protect the public. And so the public can't see a lot, but there has been a tremendous amount of activity, and we've accomplished a lot in the last month. All of the basement floors and walls have been demolished in preparation for the installation of the micropile system, which will be one of the next packages that we put out to bid. For those who were used to the spooky basement with all of the little cubbyhole walls and places that you went, you know, you'd go around another corner and lo and behold, there was another room. All of that is gone. The parts that remain are the structural columns and members that remain. All of the cement floor, where there was cement floor, all of that has been removed. And it really looks a lot different down there. There was some asbestos tile in the basement. Again, asbestos tile is safe for the occupants and users of the building as long as you don't pull it up. Obviously, installed throughout the building for the construction project so that this construction will remain safe throughout and we know what's live and what's not. And it will also help with the overhead when they start to do the micropile systems. You don't have all those wires hanging overhead. As everybody can see, this is probably the most visible part. The trees were removed. We removed five trees, four of the deodoras and one Italian cypress tree. All of that was in preparation so we can do the excavation and the scaffolding of the building that we're going to have to do in order to repair it. The contractor on that, Whit Turn, worked and partnered with the Historical Society. So the Historical Society got a lot of those big major logs that they're going to try and mill and turn into some very nice, I know they have a lot of different ideas, cedar planks, possibly floors, possibly tiles to sell to people, benches. So they were very excited to get that wood, and that wood will go to good use. We're having exploratory footing excavations this week. So that's exciting. We're going to go ahead and dig in the dirt, see what the footings and the foundation of the building actually is. As you know, we don't have as-built drawings for the building, so we've been guessing what the foundation system is. This will be able to allow us to verify it, hopefully verify it, or if not, we'll go ahead and change some of the drawings and change some of the calculations and figure that out. But that's a big item. I think it starts Thursday and it'll probably go through the rest of next week. I'm sure you guys, people have driven by on West Mall, East Mall, West Mall. and you can kind of peek through the open gate. You see all those big piles of concrete. That's everything that they're removing from the basement. Next week you'll see, if you can peek through the fence a little bit, a lot of the digging around both the outside of the basement and they'll be inside. Next week also they're going to start removing the ADA ramp that's on the Lewis Avenue side of the building. We have to remove that ramp because we're going to, again, excavate out and build in a new micropile system around the outside of the building. So we have to remove that to be able to get there. So that'll be gone. And some more asphalt and concrete removal of the ramp that goes down into the basement and that area there. We have bid out and received the bids for the penthouses. They're very, very favorable. Morcor firm was the lowest bid. The bids came in at about $141,000. This was a project or a bid package that we had estimated at $500,000. We have not brought that to council for a range, which represents a significant number of local contractors, trying to get the word out to all of the local contractors, and not just local contractors, but local subcontractors, vendors, trades, laborers. There's lots of opportunities on this job. You know, as the Bernards guys, they're from out of town, but they have to find apartments and eat in restaurants and go to the grocery store. We want to make sure they have the tools to do that. So we're also working with the chamber to get packages out to all of our contractors on what is here in town. Excuse me, just 1 minute. We are currently pre-qualifying several contractors for Package 8, which is our large historical package. We have between eight firms that will be qualified. Might be as low as 6, could be as high as 10. We're still looking through all of that, asking for additional information. I am sorry about that. Once we get those firms decided, we're planning on a meet and greet type of event that'll allow local contractors, including those local contractors that are pre-qualified and the out-of-town contractors, to get together, because there's going to be lots of opportunities and trades within the different packages. Also to get places like Outlet Tool Supply or Home Depot or restaurants to meet those guys and say, hey, we're here in town and we'd like to help, you know, you with supplies or tools or whatever the case may be. So we're working on an event like that. That'll probably be coming sometime in February to make sure that we can get everything going. But try and get the word out. It's coming. I know Steve Martin's working hard on it. We just need to give him a date. So that's the update for City Hall. Now on to the project awards. Oops. There are three awards tonight. The first is for Deputy Inspection Services, and we're recommending an award to Earth System Specific. The second is an addition to the construction management contract with Bernards. As you know, we awarded them a contract in May, but only negotiated for services through December, so that allowed us some time to figure out what the project was, figure out what their services were, and what we really wanted them to do versus not want them to do. So this is to get this through the rest of the project. The same thing with Millennium Consulting. I believe we awarded the full contract to them in March, but only inspection services. What is it that they're going to do, and why is it going to cost us $387,000? There's several different types of classes of inspections and work that they're going to be doing. The first is with the micropile system. Micropiles will be used to underpin the existing building foundation. So this will become your new building foundation. The type of micropile to be used is left to the contractor. So the contractor has to design a system that meets the loads and the requirements of the engineers. However, the piles must be a minimum of 12 inches in diameter and will be embedded down 10 to 25 feet into bedrock. So they're going down that far. The consultant basically has to, and they're going to install approximately 258 micropiles in the basement of the building. Per the project specifications, a licensed engineer is to observe the installation of all micropiles. So that's what Earth Systems will do. They'll provide the licensed engineer watching the installation of each and every micropile. In addition, special inspection of micropile construction is also required in special testing. So they'll be doing all of that. For the cast-in-place concrete, pile caps, basement walls, basement slab on grade, Earth Systems will provide special inspection of reinforcing steel, epoxy anchors, concrete placement. They'll do tensile and bend tests on reinforcing steel. They're going to do some soils testing. So the Earth Systems shall provide soil special inspection intermittently as required for the backfill of the basement walls. Again, we're going to excavate everything out, dig down, install the micropiles, pull it back together. They're going to do the basement slab on foundation. They're going to expect the basement slab on foundation backfill and other miscellaneous flat work. Shotcrete, according to the project plans, the interior side of the exterior walls, floors 1 through 3, will be strengthened with reinforced shotcrete. The new shotcrete walls will be up to 8 inches thick and are intended to strengthen the exterior and unreinforced. Rebar will be attached to the interior of the existing URM walls and shotcrete applied. In order to connect new rebar to the URM walls, mechanical and epoxy anchors will be installed, and these guys will inspect all of those items, as well as inspection of the sampling of the masonry repair. And this is the one that kind of shocked me, was the masonry repair. Basically, there's a significant amount of masonry repair in there, and you're going to put anchors in to attach that masonry to the testing expertise. We budgeted $425,000. We negotiated a contract of $387,000. Dan Huff from Bernards and Russ spent a significant amount of time going through the proposal, making sure that it was the right amount. It will be a time and materials proposal not to exceed. Bernards is our next contract amendment tonight. I know we're all familiar with Bernards. Bernards is our construction management firm. The initial phase was awarded in April 2010. Again, because there wasn't a great grasp, this project is so huge and so complex, we wanted to make sure that we had some time to figure out how we were going to do the project, how we were going to bid it, how we were going to do stuff. So we awarded them the construction management for the whole project, but only negotiated through December 2010. This amendment that we're proposing tonight will take us through the remainder of the project, through June 2013. And that's about a $2.9 million project. They have come in under budget and under contract through December. In fact, we think the amount of money that we approved for the first part of the contract will take us through about mid-February. So they have been very diligent in watching and keeping the staffing down to what we need and working to keep the cost down. And we believe they will with this. It's a total of $3.6 million, which is a little higher than we had originally told you in July. In July, we were still at the preliminary stages of the project. Thought we might be done a little bit early. This takes us through June 2013. We worked for a significant amount of time with Bernards to make sure that we're staffed right. We don't want to be penny wise and pound foolish, saving on my Bernards contract but costing me a lot more in change orders and RFIs and other things. And we believe this is the right amount of staffing for that. Millennium is the last contract tonight. Millennium does all of our hazardous materials abatement, testing, monitoring. Again, we went through a significant RFQ process back last year. And after that significant process, we picked Millennium Consultant as our hazardous material consultant for the whole project. Because we didn't know how much hazardous material was in the building, we didn't want to negotiate the full project at that time. What we decided was the best and most cost-effective method was to negotiate the testing and the report, and then look at that testing and report and decide how much we'd have to spend on the remainder of the report. Maybe Brian can. It's in your staff report. This is kind of an ongoing of where we are, what we've spent, budget. We are still under budget. We're doing very well. We have $1.6 million more in available or projected available funds than we are projecting for the project. We continue to see really good numbers, and we hope to continue throughout the rest of the project. The recommendations are on page 101 of your agenda package. I didn't put them up here because they would have been so small. No one could have read them. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Rochelle. Good report once again. And at this time, I'll just entertain questions from council members. No question. Councilman Sturdivant.
I do have one question about the deputy inspection services. When you said it was time and materials, but there's a cap on that. If the pilings are large, if you find that they need to be deeper, if you find that there's some substantial, let's just say, increment into the amount of what's going to take to do the job, what do we do in that respect?
If we decide that it's going to take a longer period of time, because what you're basically paying for is an inspector to sit there and watch them install them, if we find that it's going to take a longer period of time to do that, we would work with Earth System Specific for that additional time and try and manage that as best we can. Bernard's would work with a contractor, first of all, to try and get them within the time frame that we had all projected. But if there is a slide, then we can go ahead and do a change order. The purchasing policy does allow us to do change orders up to 20% administratively, and we do have a contingency budgeted that hopefully we never spend in order to do that. But we believe that we can get it done under this.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other council member questions? Seeing none, I will open it up to the public if anyone would like to speak on this item. Seeing no one approach, we will close public comment, bring it back to the council. I would like to direct a question to Rochelle and Councilman Kelly. I'm going to ask you to follow up on this, too. I think you might add an insight. I know we've done a great job in getting funding for this project. It couldn't have worked out better on that front, and it's certainly been a good time on getting our bids in. Everything has come in under budget. This has probably been a project that's had the most scrutiny of anything I've seen since I've been on council, and I know we did have some review by FEMA.
Pleased with the way things are going, the bids that are coming in. We're doing everything we can to keep those costs down, doing a lot of the work internally, which allows us both to buy local and allows us to save money as we're not paying the contractor overhead on that. This is a big, intimidating project. I can understand a lot of the public's fear on it, but we're very confident, and certainly since Bernard's has come on board and done some independent cost estimates in addition to the Davis Langdon and what we're seeing on the bids, we're feeling very confident in the numbers and the budget.
Thank you. Councilman Kelly, either add a comment or I think we could even have a motion on the floor.
Well, I would just like to confirm that. I think when I came on board, I was a little, I guess you could say, critical or leery of the numbers that were floating around. There were all sorts of different numbers in the Langdon report. You could look at this number here, and if this happens, that could happen. If that doesn't happen, this could happen. And the numbers were all over the place. We really didn't have a set of plans. And so I did scrutinize it probably more so than everybody else on the city council. Having come from a background in the building industry for 20 years, I kind of know all the tricks, how to do it right. And I've learned or seen other people how they can do it wrong. And I was very critical. I did not want to see the city get caught into maybe making a mistake on a project this big. This is probably one of the biggest projects on the Central Coast besides a freeway overpass or a Hearst Castle or something. So, yes, I was very, very critical. And I think when Bernard's came on board, I developed a lot more confidence. We had a couple of meetings, and at one time I asked them a tough question, and they were able to answer it, which I didn't think they could. And at that time I said, okay, I'm happy. So and I'm happy today. I'm really happy that the bids are coming in lower than we expected, and I wonder why Bernard's hasn't come in cheaper. Not to put you on the spot or anything.
No.
So anyhow, no, I'm happy, and I look forward to going ahead. And if you can save us some money, we're more than glad to take it back. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your thoroughness on this project, too, Councilman Kelly. Other comments? Councilwoman Fonzie.
I would just like to state I'm very pleased to see that we're incorporating local people into the bidding process, and we'll spend that money and have a multiplier effect in our community.
And the amount of $75,319 for Phase 3 of Hazardous Materials Abatement Consulting and Monitoring Services for the Historic City Hall Project. And three, execute a contract addendum with Bernard's in the amount of $2,876,562 for the remaining construction management / project management services for the Historic City Hall project.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilman Kelly, seconded by Councilwoman Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie.
Yes.
Councilmember Clay.
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Kelly.
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. The next item on the agenda will be talking about strategic planning. And what I recommend to staff and council is we take a 10-minute break. I would like to reconvene exactly at 8 o'clock, if we may.
Sounds good.
Very good. We will take a break until then. Thank you. If staff and council members could find their way back.
Hey, Tom, what was in here?
Council and staff back. We'll call the meeting back to order. Continue on with our agenda. We have strategic planning 2011. First topic is finance issues.
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley and City Council members. The item you have before you tonight is the next phase of the council strategic planning session and getting ready in preparation for the next two-year budget cycle, your strategic planning session, and basically a plan. As I said, this is the first official step on the road to adopting a budget. Certainly over the last 2 years, the 2 years of the existing budget, you're collecting a lot of information, you're forming needs and priorities, trying to understand that. But this is just an update of where we are and so that we know what we're looking at as we go into the strategic planning process. There's five major risk areas for the city. These have been fairly consistent risk areas because they are our largest factors. There's property tax revenue, which makes up a significant amount of revenue, sales tax, certainly reserves and our reserve policies. Personnel is our largest portion of the general fund budget, and the state of California we've been talking about. Property tax makes up between 45% and 50% of general fund revenues, depending on what's going on that year. The current secured property tax is coming in as projected for 2010-11. So we're about where we expected for this year. However, next year isn't looking so good. In June and this summer, things were looking very good. Property tax, median home prices for not just this county but throughout the state were up anywhere from 15% to 25%. It looked like our real estate market was starting to rebound slowly, trying to get some good things. But unfortunately, this fall, it's taken kind of a nosedive. Median home prices are down about 15% here in the county, which means we will be taking another property tax hit in 2011-12. We hadn't planned on that hit. We had hoped that property taxes would start flattening out and we would see another recovery. So these are worse news than you probably saw this summer and certainly last fall. On the good news side, California Consumer Price Index, which is a function or part of how we determine our property taxes, is up 0.75%. Last year, for the first time in history, we had our negative taxes are calculated in the staff report, and exactly what assumptions went into developing the property tax assumptions. This is what we think property taxes will look like. The darker green, I don't know how that looks on there, is our actual property taxes. How you see they went up, and then we've taken some big hits. We expect one more hit, and then hopefully a flattening and a very slow climb out. Sales tax revenues are about 15 to 20% of our general fund revenues, and here I have a little bit better news. Although Slo County has lagged the rest of the state, the rest of the state enjoyed some very nice recovery percentages in second quarter 2010. We didn't see those recoveries until about third quarter of 2010. But we are up. We're up above projections, not significantly, but it's a step in the right direction. Certainly all of the aggressive economic development that the council and the redevelopment agency have been doing, we're starting to see the fruits, and we're going to see the fruits in the next few years, and we included several of those in our projections for out years. We are expecting a 3.5% increase in 11-12, and we'll continue to see that rise. Again, it's a slow economic recovery. Without the addition of some major retail outlets that we certainly will hope will, for our sales tax picture, will be coming here at Atascadero, we don't think we'll be enjoying any of those 12, 13% increases that we used to see for some time to come. As you can see, our swings in sales tax are much more significant than our property tax, and we have taken a massive hit. We're down to the 2000-2001 level and below. That's prior to Home Depot arriving, so it has not been pretty, but we are hoping that we'll start pulling out, certainly with the addition of Colony Square and some of the stuff going on downtown and other places. All of that will help. Personnel and labor are about 74% of general fund expenses. This is where we spend our money. Jim's going to do another presentation right after this on labor, but I kind of want to tell you about another change that has occurred since our previous projections. There are some major CalPERS increases coming down the pike. CalPERS is our retirement system for our employees. Our employees do not pay into Social Security, nor do they pay into Social Security. Instead, we have a different retirement system for them. Living longer, which is very nice. When you're a retirement system that has to pay out until the person dies, it costs more money. They are going to be charging us for that. The amounts and the percentages are in the staff report and are in there in detail. They're also doing a new asset allocation plan where they invest their funds. They want to take a more conservative tack, and they're going to assume instead of earning 7.75% on our investments, that we'll only earn 7.5%. That's going to cost us another 5% for public safety. All in all, these three increases are going to cost us about $1.1 million annually once they are fully implemented, I think in 13-14. Again, there's a lot of information in your staff report. So while we don't have any any salary increases built into the projections for the expenditures, we have all of these increases. So we're still putting a lot more money towards employees, but they're not seeing it in their paychecks. There's also health insurance increases that we'll be paying for. State impact, as we've talked about, state budget deficit is about $25.4 billion. If you talked to me last week, we would have thought we were protected between Prop 1A and Prop 22, that they could not take any more funds. The voters clearly said we don't want the state to take local governments. The governor has found a way around that. He is planning on eliminating redevelopment. So that is a significant change that is going to hurt this city and this community tremendously. It's in the very early stages. There's a lot of conflicting information out there. We're trying to get as much information as we can and trying to position ourselves as best we can to weather the storm and to try and keep as much as we can local, finish those things. The governor has indicated that he wanted to keep current projects and current obligations and allow redevelopments to finish those out before taking funds. In that spirit, we want to make sure that we're positioned so that our current projects and current obligations are in the hopper, are formalized, are there, so that we meet the spirit of the governor and keep as much of that money here with what we plan to do local. Some of the preliminary understandings, what I read was that it required two today. This is just a little bit more about the redevelopment agency. We do have $8.4 million in reserves to pay for the projects that we have planned and that you guys have been prioritizing, along with, you know, some of the debt service reserves and other things. And so we want to make sure that we protect that and can finish the City Hall project, zoo entrance, those five things, keep our economic development and our tourism and our marketing going. A lot of really good things that's going on. We are working with the California Redevelopment Association to try and fight the elimination. We're not rolling over and playing dead. That is our best bet. Not our best bet, but our will help us the most is if we can get that changed and stopped. And we're going to try and also work with CRA and the League as the governor starts to craft legislation and word it to make sure that it meets the complete intent of the governor if we can't get it eliminated. And we're going to be proactive, so we're moving forward. I know I've talked to several of you individually about what we're doing, and we'll talk a lot more on Friday. Reserves. We have always had a plan, obviously, to reuse the reserves from good times, put away reserves in good times, and use them in bad times. Right now, the general fund has reserves about $7.5 million. Reserves are basically your savings account over the years. It's a collective amount of revenues over expenditures. So as we come in and we have a net income of $1 million, that goes into your reserve. If the next year you have a net income of another $1 million, now you have $2 million in reserves. It's your savings account. We have multiple funds throughout the city. Some have reserves that are available to be used for the general fund. Most of them do not. Most of them are very restricted and can't be used for that. And there's multiple types of reserves. The general fund undesignated reserves are the ones that we talk about the most and the ones that we can actually use for whatever legal purpose council decides. So those are the what we talk about when we talk about reserves. We've always planned on using reserves in the 2009-2011 budget cycle. We planned out and we looked throughout 7 years to make sure that we had adequate reserves all the way through with the thing and that it was okay to be using against risk of an emergency or a cash flow problem or another theft by the state to keep you going. What you need to balance that on is how low are you willing to bring those reserves, or how important is that safety net? And that's really a function of how expensive is that? How much is the pain that it cost me to build up that reserve? Certainly, if there was no pain to build up the reserve, everybody would have a very nice big safety net. If the cost to build the net hurts more than what would happen if the net wasn't there, you wouldn't have a reserve. So I'm going to try and phrase it better when we talk about those and really talk about priorities. If you were looking at, and this is ridiculous, I'm just going to throw that out, eliminating your fire department but keeping, by gosh, that 20% reserve. Obviously, Bill, we're not going to do that. clearly, it's very important to have a fire department for medical and other purposes, and you'd be willing to lower that reserve in order to keep that in place, because the cost of doing that is much more than the risk that you're trying to prevent. This is the graph that we've all seen. This is the one where our plan is, where we're taking away, and those yellow lines above the white line, that's where we're putting away reserves. In the yellow, when the yellow line's below the white line, that's when we're spending the reserves. And the idea is to equal them out. This is really what's happened and what's continuing to happen. We had some nice reserves. We built them up in that nice yellow hump above the white. But then we saw that the dip was a lot steeper, a lot deeper, a lot quicker, and it's going to be a lot longer pulling out than what our regular model would accept. So we made a ton of cuts last year. We're very aggressive in those cuts in order to accommodate that. So this is kind of the current model that we're working under, and this is the current model that we're going to have to continue to work under. Okay, this is the depressing slide.
We can't see it.
When we did our projections last year, and it's really small, but what you want to do look at is page 160 of your staff report. Has your estimated revenues and expenditures and what we're projecting. We are currently projecting a $1 million loss this year. 20% still the level that we want. What are the choices? What are the priorities? What are the changes that we're going to need to make? And we'll be bringing you a lot of information over the next few months on where we want to adjust. So this is with no adjustments, but obviously we're going to do that.
Thank you. If we could inject some questions. Councilmember Kelly.
That $1.7 million that you mentioned, did that include the CalPERS increase?
That does include the CalPERS increase. All of these include the CalPERS increase. All of those assumptions that are in the staff report for revenues and expenses. We are the masters of our destination. We can change some of those and influence those, as we saw that we've done with sales tax, bringing those up. As we look at fees, as we look at expenditures, as we cut programs, we can change this, but this is with the assumptions that are in there. This is where we are, including the PERS increases.
I have a question.
Councilmember Kelly. I'm sorry, Councilmember Clay.
Right. He's the one with the mustache.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Michelle, are you saying that we can go out to 2016-17 presently? Is that your estimate with our reserves?
That is my estimate with reserves. Mm-hmm. We can go, if we follow this plan, if we don't change anything, our reserves drop down to $145,000, which is less than 1% of annual expenditures in 2015-16. The policy question that we'll be discussing is that okay? Is that okay? Is that not okay? And my guess is we'll probably want, my recommendation will be, is that we don't want to drop that low, but maybe a little bit lower than we had projected when we looked at it last time. We're going to have to balance that risk, and that's where that policy question is going to come in.
So you're saying we're going to probably have to make some adjustments as we go along year after year?
That would be my recommendation.
Thank you.
Councilman Kelly.
Are there any rules? I know there's some places where it's mandated that you have to have a certain percentage of reserves. Is there anything that applies to the city?
There is not any outside agency that imposes rules on the city. The city does adopt it. We did adopt a reserve policy for our bonds. That reserve policy says that if we're going to drop below 20%, that the city council has a long-term plan showing that they will eventually turn around.
How much would be available to use if we had to?
It would depend on what you're going to use it. If you're going to use it for an expenditure with no intention of paying it back, All of your what we call internal service funds, funds where we put away money for vehicle replacement, building replacement, equipment replacement, technology replacement, those do not have restrictions on them. However, obviously, if you use those the next time a police vehicle dies, you don't have the money to replace it. So it would be something that you look at. You do have money that you can borrow from other funds. Again, we got ourselves in a lot of trouble in the 90s borrowing from the wastewater fund without a plan to pay it back. If there was an emergency, because we have that cash in the wastewater fund, we probably have that as a safety net if you need to, but you need to come up with a plan to pay it back. So, you know, again, we'll have a lot more in-depth discussions as we do that and as we look at the priorities and develop the costs a little bit more and talk about, okay, are we willing to accept more risk and is it okay to borrow from the wastewater fund? Or absolutely, if we had another earthquake, we still wouldn't want to borrow from the wastewater fund temporarily. So those are the policy questions we're talking
about. Fine,
thank you.
Councilmember Sturtevant.
Is it listed somewhere where these funds are and what the restrictions are and the amounts they have and those kind of things?
They are all in the audit, and we'll do some graphs for the council strategic planning on the wall like we did last year, but there's over 60 funds, and so they get a little bit information overload. In the audit, it has all of that, and it has a brief description of each fund, whether or not it can, what it can be used for. It doesn't necessarily say in there whether you can borrow from it or not, but it does have a lot of good information.
Right. Actually, what I was thinking, it was like more of a layman's term way of listing it. In other words, these are the funds we have. These are the capabilities for them. This would be a pot of money we could borrow from if we need to, and just kind of more simplistic.
Right.
Okay. And just like a more of a spreadsheet format or something, just something simple.
We can try and do that.
Thank you.
Councilman Fonzi.
I was wondering when we have this strategic planning session, if you can put together something that shows the percentage of personnel costs, that we know we're at 74%, but we're having rising fees and structures and expenses for medical that are coming up. And at the end point, I'd be interested in knowing where we will be percentage-wise in terms of our total.
The information in a little bit different manner. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Other council member questions? Very thorough, Councilwoman Fonzi states. We agree. What do we need to do from here for your input?
I think this was just an informational item. I wanted to tell you where we are so that as we go into strategic planning, as you start to develop what your priorities are, what you want to accomplish in the next few years, you have a foundation and know where we are and the other decisions that are going to be coming before you in the next few years. I know there's a lot of demand in the community for services, and it's very frustrating not being able to do those services. And just wanted to get that information out.
Thank you. What I understand that there are a number of policy issues we will review during strategic planning, but I think some that come to mind, as we have said, economic development is our number one priority and goal. We are very focused on the revenue side. Number two that comes to mind is we have a policy that we're going to make the tough decisions. We're not going to push it on to staff. If there's anything that comes up that we think needs to be funded, we're going to have to make a cut somewhere else to balance that. And third, we also have a policy. I'm questioning, is it currently in place that we have a certain reserve requirement we put on ourselves? So to meet that, we would need to look at some reductions if we don't find some increases here in the next year or two.
That is correct.
Thank you. Other council member questions or comments? Councilman Kelly.
I would just like to make a comment. Rochelle, you're unbelievable. You've always got the answers. And there's very, very complex, all of this bookkeeping. I know when I go down there, you come up with the answers all the time. And I just want to say thank you for just being so thorough. And you're an expert. And please don't let anything ever happen to you.
Yeah, we want to make sure we pay our insurance premiums. Yes, thank you. I'm going to open up to the public if any member of the public would like to comment on this item and before we move on. Welcome, Mr. Brindler.
Before you get quick on the trigger on this light, I have some documents that I'd like to incorporate as part of the record. And Marcia, if I could give these to you, if that's okay. This is a salary survey and an addendum. The survey itself is raw data, so you don't need to necessarily concern yourself with that information tonight, but I would like you to look at the addendum. And so what I'm expressing is if you'll give me up to 6 minutes.
Mr. Brindler, I'll give you 3 minutes on this agenda item. You're welcome to spend 3 minutes on the next agenda item. You can mix your comments during either time.
It
is fine.
It would certainly be more expeditious to do it now and then.
You are using your time up now. I suggest you keep moving. Thank you.
I haven't. Play hardball. Okay. My name is Mike Brindler. I'm a 30-year resident of Atascadero, and tonight your discussion of financial and labor issues affords me an opportunity to present you with a salary and benefits survey related to the job classification of city manager. I had mentioned this undertaking in previous public comment, and this survey is comprehensive, and it includes the 7 municipalities in San Luis Obispo County. In conducting analysis, I discovered what I will refer to as anomalies related to the salary and benefits for the Atascadero city manager. Since you're discussing fiscal difficulties, strategy, and prudence, what better time to produce the survey and raise some of these issues before the public? Now, our city manager can argue that his salary is consistent with the average here in San Luis Obispo County. In fact, it's 1% below the average. In this regard, Mr. McKinney's salary is ranked third among San Luis Obispo County city managers. What is telling, however, is that in total compensation, he is ranked second, and he's actually 14% above the average and 18% above the median point. His annual total compensation exceeds $250,000. In addressing this disparity, I discovered several components that drive the disparity: city contributions to deferred compensation, city contributions to insurance policies, particularly a long-term disability policy, and other contributions, including contributions to fund a health club membership and an annual cashback option for unused sick leave.
Thank you, Mr. Brindler. Your time is up on this time. I am going to allow you some leeway after the second agenda item, and I'll give you a little extra time at that time.
I would appreciate
Thank you.
That. Thank you.
And that's labor. So I want to specifically focus on that and where your labor pool is and how much it costs. So we'll be discussing the staffing levels. I want to share with you what your labor organization is and where this money goes to, what staff's capacity is after some of the reductions we've had. I want to compare us broadly to other organizations in the county and share with you or reiterate the financial challenges related to your labor pool. The Atascadero organization is complex. There are 7 different departments with very different missions. Your employees, as you'll note, are down 13.3%. That was a result of the layoffs that were authorized in 2008. Well, since 2008, they were authorized 2 years ago. We are a full-service city, so we provide several different things and different services to our public, and you are the third largest in the county. So you do have a complex organization with a very diversified labor pool. We're the largest city by square miles, 150 lane miles, and so while our founder had some very incredible visions of what our community would be, the financing in California of communities of this nature with our population is very difficult today. And that is just structurally a challenge you have, but our community is indeed beautiful. We have 4.1 full-time employees per 1,000 residents, and that is down from 5. So that's a significant reduction in service, while you'll see our demands have continued to increase. And so has that been done? I want to show you each of your departments quickly and to remind you how many people work for you and what they're doing. And so in the police department, you have 28 sworn police officers and 10 civilian members. The civilian members are your records clerks, your support services people, your crime scene investigator, that sort of thing. And you can see the areas in which the police department focuses. Those are listed on the board. However, in the police department, sworn positions have been reduced from 32 to 28. That's a reduction of 12.5%, and that includes a motor officer and a canine. And so those have been reductions through chills or layoffs since that time. Non-sworn positions have been reduced by 9% from 11 to 10. That was primarily a records clerk. And while we see these reductions, the regulations as far as how we handle custody and how we can interact with the people that we hold in custody, how we approach our residents at traffic stops have continued to get more difficult. The technology demands of how we fill out reports with the Department of Justice and how we interact with the expectations in the courts of how we log property and that sort of things have gotten more difficult. And frankly, criminals have evolved. They are more in this economy. They're more desperate. In the fire department, you have 20 full-time staff, 18 reserve firefighters, and 6 seasonal fire personnel that work during the peak season. We are an all-risk department, and you can see what that means. There are several different types of responses that the Atascadero Fire Department responds to, and they're very well trained to respond to all of those things. But sworn fire personnel has been reduced from 21 fire personnel to 19. That's a reduction of nearly 10%. Response times have lengthened a bit as a result of the community growing, increasing call volume, and you can see that's from economics. People who don't have health care will call the fire department as a first-line responder, and as the population's grown, we're also seeing a queuing up of simultaneous calls, which means we'll have a call to one call, a queued second call, a third call, and a fourth call. And so then the fire captains have to triage how they respond, and so we're seeing a greater frequency of that. The state of California and the federal government and the National Fire Protective Association all could also continue to increase the number of hours required for training, which means that's just means you have more overtime and that sort of thing. And those are things you have to do when you have a fire department. Again, in the fire department, a minimum staffing level has been established. I think that unless the council tells us differently, response times and the queuing of calls, we see that we're concerned about that, and so that level has been established. In the Public Works Department, you have 23 full-time staff. You can see, again, their areas of responsibility are very broad. You will see on the slide there are two things that are in red. These are things that while you've cut back on your staffing here, these didn't exist. The friendly state of California has shared with us that we have to do these things. And so even if you have constrained resources, the state that knows best has told you that you will spend your resources on these things, despite your local cuts. And so I think that can be frustrating to you, as we know, particularly in the issues of fog, fat soils and grease, and water quality control, and just increased regulations from the stormwater permit and that sort of thing. I think we've discussed those issues in public for a while. Your staffing here has been reduced 21%, and those have mainly been in the streets and parks, and those are the things that are important to the community and important to you, as you've said. You can see we've added the state-mandated position, but we are not able to keep up with our current service demands. So I just wanted to remind you of that you've crossed that line as far as when are we having a hard time. We're not able to provide the level of maintenance that the community needs, which means we are deferring a lot of that. So we're going from 1 year to 2 years that we can't get to a street, or I think Rochelle said it'd take us 150 years to pave every street at the current available. So frustrating for you, I'm sure, and for us, and so these are things we need to consider as we move into strategic plan accreditation and the energy at the zoo. Are there future revenue streams for that? We don't know. The zoo is costly. It is subsidized by the general fund. They, too, have deferred maintenance, and we've seen a huge uptick at our events. I think you may have noticed that. Cruise night, the concerts in the park, movies, that impacts the parks, that creates trash, that creates demand, so difficult. I wish one of the departments was different, but they're not. So here in community development, you have 10 full-time positions. Obviously, development has slowed significantly. However, there are definite challenges. You've reduced that department by nearly 30%, from 14 community development staff people to 10. And in this department, we now have a few major projects coming through. Eagle Ranch, as you saw tonight, Walmart. These are very complicated, very technical, and they, too, have new building codes. The green building codes are very complex. You've just seen those this evening. And so the Community Development Department is also wrestling with those issues. and administrative services. You have 7 full-time positions. I think you keenly saw the work of the administrative services department tonight, just before this item. They have also diverse areas of responsibility, and there's 3 at the bottom in red. As a result of the restructuring here at City Hall a year and a half ago when we laid off staff, they've picked up a bulk of the human resources function. And so that's the employee benefits, counseling, orientation of new employees, processing of employees. That is a pretty significant work effort that cost one of Rochelle's staff 3.25 hours of that person. And so that work had to be realigned, in addition to adding the affordable housing compliance of some of the issues we've done. And City Hall is a huge work effort that was not anticipated. And so there have not been personnel reductions, per se, in the administrative services department, but we've added the work of 2 full-time staff to them as a result of these things. And you can see there are several challenges. The city manager's office has 8 full-time staff. That also includes the technology operations for the city, so that's not just administrative staff. And you can see our areas of responsibility there. We've had a reduction of 27% in our staff from 11 to 8. And you can see that we're really struggling with city morale and keeping the employees productive and feeling good about working here. We're all very happy to work, and this is a great place to work. But continuing to see the previous report had no raises for 6 years. And so how do you keep people feeling good and productive? And so that's something we're really trying to work through. And OED is really a priority. We need to try and grow ourselves out of this. And so the office has been working through that. So you can see, again, some of the challenges we have. So this shows your employees per 1,000 residents. We've received direction from you over the last several years as we have a dollar to give to the staff. As we do our salary surveys and we see we're lagging and our wages are towards the bottom, which has a direct correlation with the type of staff and employee you have, the firefighter protecting a home or the police officer responding, we've tried to keep our salaries at median or just above median so we weren't losing our staff to other cities. And there's a cost of retraining that's very expensive. And so we've tried to keep that towards the middle. And so as we've had some huge increases in revenues through property or sales tax, we have, as a team, decided that we would try and, if 5% could be afforded, we'd take 3% or try and share that with the employees. And the employees understood that too, and that 2%, this was a team effort, would be set aside in your reserves for difficult days. And so when there was, we were lagging a bit, we didn't have the raise we should have or could have given. And then you can see in good times or in bad times, you've cut, and you've cut quickly, but maybe not cut as deep because there was that reserve. And so on your labor strategy and how you manage your costs, this has been pretty familiar or similar to your financial strategy. But this chart looks familiar. We've done the same thing here. When the bottom fell out of the economy and our revenues dropped, we needed to cut staff and really look at cutting benefits. And the executive team took a 3% salary cut. You cut your staff by the 14%. We had to address some of that. Then the question becomes, as we look to the future, all of your contracts are expiring again on June 30th with all of your employees, and that means that's where we actually go to the bargaining table and discuss salary and conditions of employment and benefits. And so we'll be coming to you in closed session to get direction. And you can see the white line. You can see where that cut was. Was the cut enough? Are the costs rising too fast? Do we really need to understand, do we change these lines that you see here further to keep pace with our revenues? And those are discussions we're going to be having. And largely in part, there are the increased PERS costs that you saw. We've heard about that. That's something we need to deal with. Health insurance costs, et cetera. And so how the discussions we'll be having with you as part of strategic planning is you're already thin, so adding staff or adding work gets difficult. And if the staff trying to keep morale well, how stretched do we put work onto the staff? But at the same time, while we haven't put raises into the budget at all, are there cuts? Are there contributions? Where do we go? And what's your comfort level with spending into the reserves? Just like Rochelle said, but when it gets down to your staffing, this is really where it equates because it is the largest cost you have. So these are the issues we'll be having with discussing with you in closed session and in some at the end.
To complete what you'd like to say tonight.
Well, I would say I could probably finish in about 3 minutes.
Okay.
That interruption kind of threw me off track, but I think we can get back on track relatively quick.
Hold. Very good. Thank you. Can we adjust the clock a little bit? Or let's go ahead and allow Mr. Brindler 4 minutes since we had a little bit of adjustment there. And I'll hold you to that if I may.
You can.
Go ahead.
Thank you. And as I mentioned before, I was referring to certain what I perceive as anomalies in the components of compensation for the city manager, and I referred to those as contributions to deferred compensation, contributions to insurance policies, particularly a long-term disability policy, and other contributions, including contributions to fund a health club membership and an annual cashback option for unused sick leave. Now, as related to deferred compensation, annually, the City of Atascadero pays Mr. McKinney almost $30,000 in deferred compensation. And I will argue that that is staggering when considering that the annual average for the other six cities in this county is approximately $593 annually. It's in Mr. McKinney's case, it's over 900% above the average. Now, if you read the language in past city resolutions, one might have the impression that Mr. McKinney, like the rest of the executive managers, receives $1,000 annually, which, by the way, I believe is quite reasonable. But it's not true. And as I said, Mr. McKinney receives almost $30,000 annually, which apparently was a result of contract addendums agreed to by you, Mr. O'Malley, and you, Mr. Clay. And it's relevant to note that since 2003, Mr. McKinney has received over $154,000 in contributions to deferred compensation. Now, as related to insurance policies, Atascadero contributes almost $10,000 annually for the city manager's insurance policies, and $6,000 of that, which funds a long-term disability policy. The average of what other cities pay is approximately $593 annually. And this disparity, from my opinion, is staggering as well. By all accounts or appearances, this long-term disability policy is a Cadillac plan, and I think you need to find out what exactly is going on with that. I don't know if it's a policy that affords 100% or 50% cash back at time of retirement. But he receives 17 days administrative leave, which greatly exceeds the average of 7 days. And the value of that administrative leave is over $10,000. And in combination with the other leave, the value exceeds $39,000. And I'll argue that it's no wonder why Atascadero has to fund a position of assistant city manager to the tune of $175,000 annually when the city manager has so many days off. And in conclusion, I'll mention now, if you want to impress upon your line-level employees the prudence and the necessity of tightening belts in this economy, which I agree with, then I'd argue that you really need to start at the top. It's called leading by example, and to do otherwise invites ill will not only from the public, but from your dedicated line employees as well. And I will agree with you, Mr. Lewis, that Atascadero does have many fine employees. But if you all want to set an example, then you'll take a look at this survey, and you'll make some decisions about what's appropriate and what's not. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brindler. Is there any other member of the public wishing to speak on this item? Seeing none, we'll close public comment, bring it back to council. And again, I think we will be giving direction in the future, and we'll be discussing this at strategic planning as well. And were you looking for any direction from us tonight?
No, but I think we will in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I would think so. And this is certainly something we put a lot of time into, is reviewing the budget. We have reconstituted our finance committee. And thank you, Councilman Fonzie, at this time, and also Councilmember Kelly, for working on that. And I can say, as far as leading by example, I think one of the surveys in the Tribune showed that the council is the lowest paid city council in the county, so we are have done that. And I know we are all putting in a lot of time, and I do thank the staff for the many of us are around here a little late in the evening and putting in a lot of hours, and I just see the dedication of our staff, and again, many here represented tonight, and thank you for that. Is there any other direction from council members? I'm comfortable addressing this as our strategic planning session to start with, and we'll be working on this continuously. Okay, I think thank you for that excellent.
To talk about our restaurants, and you know, I always tell people if they go out of town to shop, or they're working out of town, or they're going to the movies out of town, to please come back and accommodate our local restaurants. Certainly, you've seen the sales tax figures, and we need that. But I'd like to say that, you know, I had the pleasure of going in the new Italian restaurant. It's Calterra, I believe, and maybe it's got something else on the name this morning, and it was buzzing, and you know, I had a good breakfast, and so we got another good restaurant going there. I did talk to the owner, which was very nice, and I wished I could remember his name. He's an ex-LA policeman, and he was very complimentary. He watches all the council meetings and has for some time, and he thinks that we're just a good common sense council, and he was very complimentary to all of us. And that brings me to the fact the last 2 years, and in fact the last 14 years that I've been on the council, I've had so many people come up and, you know, have nice things to say about what we do as council members, and I'm sure some of the other council members have the same thing. And myself, you know, I've had 50 years of community service, and I know everybody else has had their years. I'm a little older than you folks, so you'll be looking forward to your 50 years of community service, I'm sure. But, and I'd just like to say that it's really been a pleasure to serve my community. I love this community, and, you know, I'd like to hear from some of the other council members in regards to comments that they get. Particularly the last 2 years, I've had a lot of good comments and the direction we're going under these tough economic times.
Thank you, Councilman Clay. I think while we're at it, I'm just going to work my way through, and if you'd like to do your committee reports or any other announcements, we'll just combine them, and you have the floor.
Thank you. In response to Councilmember Clay's question regarding comments that are received, I, too, have received many comments from those in the community stating that they're happy to see the council on the move. They see a change in policy. They see things going on downtown, and they feel positively about their city council. I truly appreciate hearing from my constituents, and I find it very helpful when they give these comments out. I think this is largely due to hard work on the part of the council and the part of staff, but we have those that are volunteering in the community and working hard, Main Street, Chamber of Commerce, and others that contribute very, very definitely to the well-being of the city. My son was born. I still don't know how large, but I know mom is doing fine, and my grandson has now arrived. So I had to let you know. His name is Thad.
I noticed you had a little skip in your step when you come in.
I surely did.
And thanks for mentioning the other folks, Main Street, and other folks that contribute to our city. And most of them, well, they're all volunteers. They get no compensation, just for the satisfaction of doing a good job.
It's great to be part of a community filled with volunteers. I'm going to go down to Councilman Sturdivant and work my way this way.
Well, being the new guy on the block here, there's not a whole lot of, as a council member, I've not received a lot of input, a few questions and a few complaints, those kind of things. But being a citizen here in the city and being out and about, people are very, very positive. People are very, there's a feeling out there of just excitement. There's so many good things happening. Speaking to the chamber the other day, and they were saying that the installation dinner is already sold out, which is something that was just hasn't happened this quickly. And I was saying, well, I think it's because of all the excitement in town. She says, yes, she agrees. She thinks there's so many people are just so excited about all that's going on. And what's exciting is in Atascadero, it's that we are all in this together. There are so many people from the council, city, volunteers, the chamber, Main Street, all the organizations. Atascadero is the hard work of many, many people. And I think that people are starting to really feel that sense of ownership and that sense of just being involved and really caring and having a say. And just there's an excitement, and I'm just glad to be a part of it. And I have no committee anything to report.
Thank you. Councilman Kelly.
Well, I'll tag along, too. I think it's over the last 2 years, it's almost on a daily basis, I have people come up to me. I don't even know who they are. And just thanking not only me, but the city council, the staff, everybody in town that we're doing such a good job. and they enjoy what we're doing, and they're seeing all the benefits of what we're doing. And kicking back on that, part of that is the RDA. That's why it's so important that we have the citizens in town help us on this one. And following up on the new restaurant, I went in there the other day, and it's good. And, of course, you know, one of my little deals is planning and building to streamline it. So I said, how'd the process go with the city? And the guy said, awesome. So I want to thank Warren and his crew, Russ, actually everybody in the city. It's a whole team. It's not just one group. It's, you know, the fire department's involved in it, the police department's involved in it. All
And I think there is an excitement in the community that I hear. And I know staff have really sacrificed in the last few years to bring that about, and we certainly realize that. I don't want to get off into so many details. I think council members have covered that quite well. I do have some reports I could give on our some of the committees. I don't know if other council members
could I say one other thing?
Absolutely. Councilman Clay.
You know, when we're giving everybody kudos, you know, we've got to include Echo and Lowe's and Fishes and
absolutely
all the service clubs. I mean, we have some great service clubs out there, and I won't mention Kiwanis, okay, because they are pretty darn good. But, you know, it just
don't forget the Elks.
My point is that it just makes our community. It just makes it's like a big snowball going down the hill, and we're all working together, and I just think it's great. Service clubs, staff, City Council, Main Street, Chamber, and our businesses in town. So anyway, kudos to everybody.
Yes, and I just do want to make one comment. As mayor, I'm certainly sure I speak for the council. Of course, we feel very positive about our hometown, and we hear a lot of our community. I think we see a pretty wide range. But I think the true compliment is when you hear it from other outside entities that make some decisions, whether it's the bond rating, whether it's the audits. But I think it needs to be remembered that our city manager, sure, we think he's a pretty good guy, but he is recognized statewide in the associations of city managers. He's been selected to be on several statewide panels to review other cities and government entities. He's been chosen to be the top of the management team, again, statewide of other city managers. He's been asked by a number of other organizations to serve as their strategic planner. That's part of why he's wearing multiple hats for us. He's going to be leading us in our strategic planning. I got great feedback from Chamber and others that have had him serve as their strategic planner with some good commendations. So I just want to acknowledge that, you know, we spend a lot of time thanking our key staff, our department heads, but now and then we need to point out that others have recognized our city manager on a statewide basis. So that's something to be proud of, Mr. McKinney. So thank you for your service.
Tommy, he is the president of the City Managers Association.
He is.
Meeting, and then also a majority of the council, so three or more members can call a special meeting.
And that is the one exception to the Brown Act, to call a meeting if three council members chose?
Right. That's under Government Code 54956.
Very good.
And Mr. Mayor, not to be, I do want to point out after Mr. Brendler's survey that if you look at his first page in terms of total compensation as an average compared, he pulled out a variety of contract things that may or may not be in my contract or negotiation pieces, but in so as this gets reported in future days, the total compensation is in line with the other city managers. He was breaking out individual portions and citing some pretty high percentages, and perhaps more people have compensation in salary than other places. Mine is spread throughout the contract, but I think as we look at total compensation for all of our employees, including me, I just didn't want to make unfair comparisons as people review these tapes of this meeting.
Yes, I do not consider this a scientific document. Many folks submit items for our review. We certainly pay attention to that and review it, but we have been audited by CPAs. We go with our budget analysis, budget documents that are audited, and So I welcome input from the public, but these are items that we have reviewed. Thank you. Councilmember Kelly, and then Councilmember Clay.
I would just like to say there were some numbers there that were related to the median pricing, and I think he's off there because I think we're number one. And number one sometimes costs a little bit more than the median. I don't have a problem with that. I think our assistant city manager needs to get a little bit of recognition in there. I think Jim does a fabulous job here for our city, and I think I was really impressed when he and I went down to the ICSC convention in San Diego, which is the commercial shopping centers, where we try to get some of the businesses, restaurants, hotels, and everything to come to town. And I was amazed as we walked through the place that Jim knew most of the people, and the people knew Jim, that he's constantly in contact with these people trying to benefit the city and bring businesses to the town. And he's very, very knowledgeable what's going on down there. And I learned a lot from him. I'd just like to actually compliment both of you for doing a fabulous job for our city. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Kelly.
Mistake by your city manager, city attorney can cost the city $200,000 or $300,000 just like that. So it's good to have somebody knowledgeable like Wade and Brian and Jim Lewis, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, as much as I'd like to continue accolades, I did allow a little leeway tonight. We did hear a lot of positive public comment, but there were some concerns raised. I wanted to give you a little leeway for tonight, but I promise to keep us on task a little more in the future. But thank you for your comments. And on that, I will adjourn the meeting.